House Labor and Commerce will come to order. It's 4 p.m. on March 19th. We're starting a little bit late because the floor session ran over, and we let the Resource Committee use the room a little bit longer than we'd anticipated. But we have two items on the calendar for today, one of which we're definitely going to get to, and one of which is probably going to get pushed back. But the first item is the Student Managers of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Student Investment Fund. And I don't know how you want to do this. Are you guys going to rotate up, or I guess whoever's first, come up and have a seat and state your name and affiliation for the record. And then since I believe you're in charge of the program, you can pass it off to whoever you want, and we'll just rotate through them all.
Okay. My name is Craig Wisen, and I'm affiliated with University of Alaska Fairbanks for the last 10 years. And we're here today not to ask for money, but to describe how we try to make money. And we have a package going around, which is a two-part series. The first is a compendium of 75 years of American finance. That starts off at the end of the Civil War and ends at the outbreak of World War II. And in that span of time, there was an incredible amount of pain and chaos that the United States went through. And it typifies, I think, both the hardship and the resilience that America has gone through. And the last 20 years that these students have been managing funds on behalf of the University of Alaska Fairbanks with the goal of providing scholarships for future generations has been a difficult time frame. But nowhere near as difficult as what's outlined in the first 75 years of your packet. So I'll turn it over to my students, who will describe the process and describe the performance that has been produced over the last 20 years. Thank you.
I think we might do it a little different for the students. State your name and hometown. We know what your affiliation is, so.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Daniel Grundahl. My hometown is Willow, Alaska, and senior University of Alaska Fairbanks, looking to graduate with a degree in finance. And I'm working on getting employment with McKinley Capital in Anchorage. I love this state, and I very much so want to pursue a career of finance and remain in the state of Alaska, and hence that's why I'm pursuing employment opportunity with McKinley Capital in Anchorage. It'll allow me to accomplish both those goals. So I'll turn it over here really quickly to the rest of the members of this team to provide you with a brief intro of themselves, and then we'll jump right into the presentation.
Thanks. So I'm Jeff Bew, and maybe for this intro we can all sit down here, but then we were hoping maybe the group of us could stand here, and we'll just push this chair aside and make it a little bit more. We're hoping for a little bit of discussion and lots of questions from you guys throughout the presentation. And so if the whole group of us is up here, we'll make it a little bit more fun with that. But so I'm also a finance student at UAF. I'm also doing prerequisites for dental school. I'm going to apply for dental schools this spring. And so I'm kind of doing the finance degree and that, but I'm definitely planning on coming back to Alaska after finishing up dental school. There's no dental schools in Alaska, so you have to leave for that. But yeah, I lived in Nome until I was 10, and my parents were out there almost 20 years, and my mom was born and raised in Fairbanks, so I've been here a while, and her and dad both went to UAF, so yeah. So anyway, next on
the list. What you might do is, why don't you all pull up your chairs?
Okay.
I think we've got enough room.
See if the mic can. You'll let us know if you can hear us.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Craig Millard. I would be fifth generation Alaskan, fifth generation Juneauite if I stayed here. I completed my degree in finance last December. I'm currently finishing up the two jobs that I held down during my stay in Fairbanks. One of them was working at the supercomputing center up there, and I also work for a GED testing nonprofit. And I'm just finishing those things up, but I am looking for gainful employment, I do love Alaska, but I might end up in other places for a little while. But I love Alaska. I love the freedom we get here, and I really appreciate this opportunity to come down here and see you guys.
Hello, my name is Bryce Miller. I am a third-generation Alaskan. My grandparents homestead here at 57 down the peninsula. They're Cracksbury Drilling. I work for them. They do water well drilling for houses and residential and commercial wells. Been working for them for the last 10 years since I was 15. Got my CDL when I was 19. Started and then decided I needed to get an education. So I came to UAF for mechanical engineering. Took a few business classes as electives and found that it suited me better. I enjoyed it much more than Calc 3, so I changed majors. Now I'm in finance, plan to graduate in December with a BA in finance, and after that I would like to be employed in the state of Alaska and then eventually get my MBA.
I'm Mitchell Titus. I'm born and raised in Fairbanks. I'm studying to get a double degree in economics and mechanical engineering. Unfortunately, at this point, I don't know exactly what I want to do with my life. Primarily because I have a variety of interests. I like mechanical engineering and finance, and I'm also interested in, or potentially interested in, law. So I'd like to combine these and to some type of job where I can live in Alaska.
Well, my haste to get the meeting started, I forgot to introduce my committee. You probably know at least two of them, Representative Thompson from Fairbanks, Representative Sadler from Eagle River, Representative Johnson from Midtown Anchorage, South Anchorage? Someplace in Anchorage.
Someplace in Anchorage.
Myself, Chair Olson from Kenai Soldotna, Representative Lindsay Holmes from Turnigan currently, and Representative Bob Miller also from Fairbanks. So we got about over a third of the committee from Fairbanks, so, and we do have a quorum to conduct business. And with that, we'll turn it back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so we're going to talk very briefly about the course structure and how the course is structured in a way to give us the best possible opportunities to make money. That's what we're all about. The two main things about the course structure that I want to highlight that are very important is this idea of applied learning, the fact that we learn by doing, and that's it's quite an endeavor, especially when you're dealing with real money. And through the applied learning, we get into character development and accountability, which are very important when you are dealing with real money. Each student here and the students that are in the fund back in Fairbanks understand that we are dealing with other people's money, and it's our goal to manage that money responsibly and in the course of that, so that we can pay out scholarships and then grow the fund for students that will follow us. So that's a little bit about the course structure. It's very presentation driven. We do have peer feedback as sort of a check and balance, just to make sure that we are responsibly doing what it is that we are there to do. And so that's a little bit about course structure. And so we'll go ahead and move on to the next slide.
And could, when each of you begin to speak, could you give your name again? You don't have to give your affiliation, but that way the clerk will be able to tag your name on the transcript.
Will do. Bryce Miller. This is our mission statement for the Student Investment Fund. The Student Investment Fund shall manage endowed funds in a professional manner to maximize risk-adjusted returns, provide experiential learning opportunities. This basically means that we're going to try to decrease our risk and also increase our earnings and do it through a learning experience for all of the students in a very structured manner, and so that we have the ability to expand our funds without losing them is the goal, is the main goal.
Chairman?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I guess it's going to be Bryce who's speaking now.
this is a student investment fund. This is real money first, right?
Yes.
And this is generated by student fees and so forth? And what's the source of the funds?
The original endowment was $100,000 donated or endowment from UAF, and then we've grown it since then. That was where the original money came from.
And this is the responsibility of students in the management curriculum to manage?
Yeah.
Just looking for an overall kind of structure. I didn't know if this was kind of like a phantom of a portfolio, or if this is like this university's endowment, or if this is a smaller subunit. So what it is?
It's the permanent fund.
It's a permanent fund. Go about, do good work, continue.
This is some of our objectives and guidelines, you can see. And one of our major benchmarks, because we focus on large cap companies to some extent, and is to outperform the S&P 500 on a risk-adjusted basis. And these are just some of the things we aim to do. We work on screening and evaluation of companies, bottom-up approach, so we make sure that they have strong fundamentals, strong balance sheets. We're not just picking companies that are on their way in and could possibly be on their way out. We also want high liquidity so that we can sell our positions if something were to happen and not take a loss. This is a student investment fund timeline. It represents 20 years of since the inception at the 100,000K principal endowment. We were very conservative the first few years, and then in 93 to 95 we focused on small cap growth and then went to large cap growth. 97, 99 did really well. I mean, the stock market in general did very well those years and had an earnings per share growth of 25%. Then in 99 we've kind of started to restructure it to what it is now. We had three distinct portfolios. And then in 2001 to present, which is what it currently ended up as, is one portfolio with a focus on valuation and critical analysis of corporate governance. And so we focus on not only balance sheets, we also look into who owns these companies, who is running them, are they doing insider trading, do they own a huge portion of the firm, and things like that. And the one thing we wanted to show you is this has been around for 20 years. It's been a generation, like we have kept it alive for that.
Which one of you?
I think that's David Holtz.
A former student of the finance program here.
That's his son in the picture. He stopped by class, I believe it was last semester, and so he'd been in the class before, and then he brought his son over.
Yeah, I thought it was Representative Miller's Thompson's.
Max.
Thought maybe it was Scott at the first of the.
This is our organization and operations, and I'm going to hand it off to both Jeff and Mitch to talk about. Mitch is going to talk about our screening processes, and Jeff is going to talk about just how we go through the whole process to pick a stock or an equity. And that is, and basically, just an all-around, just screenshot of what we do at the Student Investment Fund.
Mitchell Titus. Each approach to the screening process is unique, and therein lies our strength and our weakness. It's a weakness in the sense that we don't have a proprietary fundamental quant-type formula that we can plug things into, but it's also an advantage in the sense that we all look at the market differently. And because it's a unique perspective, we can see it differently than other traders might. And that allows us to potentially see gains that they would not see. And here's an example of one of the screeners that I did. You put in the factors that you would like in a stock. I wanted high return on their personal investments. I wanted increasing shares. And I wanted it a lower price in comparison to the fundamental value. And then after you go through the screener, you get stocks out. Typically, you want stocks that have a broad industry or a broad array of industries, because then it shows that your screening criteria was not too specific. And after you get these, we go through what we call a human element. And basically, this is all the qualitative factors. It's entirely up to the individual. And sometimes you look at things like insider trading, or you look at price shocks, or you look at we have tools like the CFRA, which show the internal analysis of the accounting, and there are other factors that you can choose. And from this, we put it into our different models, such as the PE models and things like that that Jeff will talk about.
All right. My part's kind of long, so I'll come sit in front of the computer. So this is a little bit different formatting than the rest of the presentation, because this is one of my stocks I presented last October, and we ended up putting in the portfolio. And so it's kind of more the meat and potatoes of what we actually do in the class. And so this is kind of an example. So what we start out, we go through the screening process like Mitch was talking about, and you narrow it down to a few companies, and then you delve into those companies and figure out which ones you want to look at closer. And then when you're first looking at them, you just look at the basics of like what the company does, what industry they're in, how big they are, where they're going. And then you start looking into more specifics. And so one of the things we look at is the competition and who their competitors are, how big they are. How is the company doing compared to their competitors? Are they losing market share, gaining market share? Is someone moving into the spot that they once were competitive? So that's a big indicator of how well they're doing. We look at the revenues of the company. And so with this one, you can see, I guess you guys have the screen here, the cyclical nature of the company and how it reacts to the overall economy. And so this company in particular was a small industrial company. And so you can see in 2010 on the right, 2009, 2010, as the world economy was going into slouch, this company reacted greatly, and their revenues also went into a slouch. And so then when we look at something like this, we try and figure out why there's extraordinary things high or low, and then you delve in and figure out if there's a good reason for those to have occurred. And in this case, we also looked at other measures of profitability. And here you can see in 2009, 2010, they were having losses. And so then I dove into that to figure out why that was occurring. And so the main thing is that we do a lot of due diligence on all these companies and figure out their story, and where they've been and where they're going, and try and figure out what's affected them in the past and what's going to affect them going forward. And so, for example, I'm not going to go into all these, but I looked into what caused this company to have those reduced earnings during that 2009-2010 period, and then laid it out for the class during the presentation to show this is what occurred and this is why it makes sense. And I don't think it's going to affect them. I think they're going to be able to come back stronger from this. And this is just going more in detail of what was taking place. And going into all this right now doesn't really make sense for this presentation, but just kind of show you guys what we do in our presentations. And so normally this presentation would take about 45 minutes, just this little portion I'm doing, and be a discussion with the class, because the one presenting the stock is the one who has done all the background research and looked into it, and everyone's trusting what you've done, and so you have to be honest with your answers and know that you've done the best diligence that you can. And so you're bringing this information, and you're trying to give as much information as you can about the stock to the class, because there's a $30,000 transaction writing on your presentation. And so you don't want to provide false information or have not researched something that you should have, and then present it to the class and people vote on it, and it's some obvious thing that you could have found. So that's a big learning curve. And sometimes people find, like the night before, even though they've been researching the company for like 2 weeks, they'll find the night before the presentation some dirt on the company that makes them think, okay, this really isn't going to fit the portfolio. So then they have to state that to the class and know that they made the right decision, as opposed to presenting something and just hiding that fact. And so it's feeling for the fund as a whole, rather than your personal satisfaction. Another thing we look at is acquisitions, because a company can grow through two forms. Either they can grow internally, or they can grow by acquiring other companies. And so you kind of get a feel for what the company's growth, how they grow. You dig a little deeper into those acquisitions, look at what they're doing, why they're doing it, see if it makes sense. And then this is a little bit more qualitative perspective. We look at legal proceedings, if they're being sued by anyone, if they have a history of this, if anything abnormal. The CFRA, like I think Mitch talked about, looked at accounting scandals or any internal accounting and auditing that might be goofy. Pensions, related party transactions, are the executives buying themselves personal jets on the books and not letting anyone see it? What are they doing? Is it a shady company, or are they sound with what they're doing? Even checking basic things like message boards, you get an idea what what the average person thinks of the company, and sometimes they'll throw dirt out there that you won't find in the SEC filings. So, executive compensation, you can see if top executives are overly compensated, if they're being rational with their money, if it's equivalent kind of to other companies, similar industry, see if it makes sense to you. See if through the incentives, if their motivation is aligned with the stockholders' motivation, if their incentives are tied to how well the company does, or if they have different incentives, and so you want to see if they're aligned to your interests. This is just looking deeper at executive compensation or the related party transactions. We look at the officers, see where they went to school, what their backgrounds are, see if they're buying into the company, if they're selling out of the company, if there's any unusual volume in that. We can look at what other analysts that are paid a lot of money, what they think about the company, if they have the same feelings about the company that you do, what their feelings are. And then, so that all that stuff was kind of qualitative. And then we go deeply into the quantitative analysis through several different models, and we'll spend a significant amount of time on these models on every company that we're researching beforehand. And then a significant amount of time on these models when we're presenting it to the class. So that's a big part of the class, is this quantitative side of it also. And then this is short interest, just another metric of what other investors are feeling about, what their feeling is on the company. And then you just kind of draw up conclusions at the end of the presentation, what you think is good about the company, what you think is good about bad about the company, what's going to hurt them. Mostly it's making sure that you've done all your due diligence and that you present everything that's relevant and useful to the class during the presentation. And then you compare graphs and among other technicals. And then to be able to put a company into the portfolio, you're also required to have enough money, cash, in the portfolio to purchase it. And so usually we hold about 40 stocks in our portfolio. We have about $650,000. So to keep it at about 40 stocks, you're also required to present a company that's in your portfolio to sell, to raise the funds for your new purchase. And so I would go through with this company all the similar, same due diligence I did for that one of why I think we should sell this company to fund the new one. And so then we go through the discussion on that also. And so during this presentation, since it's like 45 minutes or something, we're fielding questions from Craig and from other members of the class. They're hard questions. They aren't just easy questions. And lots of times you don't know the answer. And so sometimes we'll pull it up and look it up on the computer right then if it's relevant, or you just state that you don't know and try and figure it out later. And then to be able to purchase, for the purchase to go through, there has to be a majority vote. And we vote that day during class anonymously. And then we execute the trade during the next class period, and we actually execute the trades in class, and whoever proposed it goes up and does the trade execution in class, so you actually go through the process yourself. So it's a real good learning experience. And I think that's most of my section. So
my name's Craig Millard again. As Bryce and Daniel mentioned earlier, our whole paradigm for this class is that we are managing other people's money, and we want to maximize the risk-adjusted return. Well, what does that mean? I'll get into that a little bit, but first I want to talk about our performance and describe the portfolio in general a little bit for you folks. We have a well-diversified portfolio. We have 40 positions. Currently, the value, we haven't checked it today, but the approximate value is $650,000. And we do things like manage risk through active weighting based upon our benchmark, which is the S&P 500. We also have some liquidity requirements. We have a tilt towards large cap stocks. All these names that you've heard of, because they're these big companies. We have companies like IBM and many of the companies that you see you would recognize. And because of that, I can tell you that we are tilted towards larger companies, and we have some statistics up for you for a few describing how our portfolio is tilted toward those. But we have these other statistics here that get into our risk-adjusted performance,
And what these will tell you is that given that we have taken 12% less risk than our benchmark, which is the S&P 500, we have adjusted, we have on an annual basis have a return of 6.03%. So this is really great because the risk adjusted metric is a formula that you can't really explain to someone, but we are taking less risk, at least not without writing it out. I don't have pen and paper with me right now. But we've taken less risk than our benchmark and have generated an above average return. And I'd like to plot some of these annualized performances for you folks. You can see the UAF student investment fund there, and on a cumulative basis, we have almost always outperformed our benchmark, and we also have the small stocks benchmark over there, which is often used by mutual fund managers. The Russell 2000 is the bottom 2000 stocks of the Russell 3000 index, and it represents smaller companies. And you can see that we've even managed to perform on term with them, given the fact that we are holding larger stocks and they are inherently less risky. But this doesn't mean that, you know, we don't make mistakes. And any given time, it's a coin toss whether we are beating the market or we lose to our benchmark and underperform. But given that this graph here represents an important fact about our portfolio, which has allowed us to generate those statistics, and that is given the magnitude of our outperformance of the benchmark, that is usually substantially better than our underperformance. And so the magnitude we outperform is offsetting to the amount when we do underperform. But at any given time period, any week or month, it's about a 50-50 chance whether we're beating our benchmark or losing to it. Turn it over to Mitchell.
I'm Mitchell Titus. This graph shows our annualized commissions as a percentage of our portfolio. You can see that in the beginning of the SIF program, we had a full service broker, and the costs were much higher. But later, due to the advent of online brokerage services such as E-Trade, which is what we use, the commissions are much less. And this is important because one of the easiest ways to increase your performance in comparison to our benchmark is to decrease your costs. And this shows our average holding period over a 12-month period. And it says that currently, every 12 months, we sell about 75% of our stocks, which works out to an average holding period of about 16 months.
Bryce Miller. This is the growth of the student investment fund versus the S&P 500. And basically, all you need to look at on this graph is just the end performance. Is we've beat our benchmark by about $150,000, and this graph is includes the dividend, or this graph re-added the money we paid out in scholarships. That's what number, the $700,000 is not $650,000. So
okay, I've got to ask this, Bryce. You guys spent the morning at the permanent fund. Did you run your numbers against the permanent fund earnings for the same period?
No.
No?
Mm-hmm. Sure, yes.
Craig Wisen. The Alaska Permanent Fund indexes the large companies that are held in their fund. So their benchmark is the S&P.
Oh, okay.
And so since we actively manage our portfolio, we have, during the last 10 years, outperformed their large cap portfolio.
Golly, that gives you bragging rights, I think. Thanks. I just knew if you had to be over there, you had to have talked about that with them.
Bryce Miller again. And like we talked about earlier, we are not without having our faults and having stocks that did not perform well. I mean, it's the market. There's a 50-50 chance. But we do like the fact that our gainers, our best performers, outweigh our underperformers. Like Chipotle had a 277% gain versus our worst performer was Hewlett Packard at negative 38%. So they vastly outweigh. And that's what these graphs show. But we have taken away from our success and our losses on those stocks.
Daniel Grundahl. Basically, to sum up here, what you've seen to this point is you've seen our performance, and it looks good. It's solid, but it cannot go without the various individuals and firms that have supported us. On the screen, you see members of the Student Investment Fund Board of Advisors. You'll recognize, of course, Mr. Bob Gillum from McKinley Capital, Joe Beadle of Northrend Bank, and various individuals at the School of Management, and also the representatives sitting in this room right now and the rest of your peers who have supported the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And as Craig Wisen said at the beginning, we're not here to ask for money. We're here to show you how we make money, and also to thank you for that support. And anytime we've had an opportunity to interact with these individuals, we have thanked them, and we continue to thank them, and continue to work hard to generate the type of results that you have seen here, to show that their support is paying off. And then moving on, we're going to conclude here, and then we'll give you folks an opportunity to ask us more questions. But the next kind of focus that we have is basically to establish a real estate investment trust that is managed by the students under the direction of Professor Wisen. And so this is what we're working on right now. The school management and the finance program is excited about this, and it is our hope that we're able to get this going hopefully by next spring or certainly fall of 2013. So thank you all for your time.
I'll start off, I guess. I guess I can.
You can.
What emphasis do you have on Alaska companies? I mean, are Alaska-based companies, Alaska Airlines, Tesoro, companies that have a significant presence in Alaska, do you have a balance or a percentage of Alaska companies?
Not sure what the protocol is here, but my name is Jeff, to the chair, I guess. And every student that looks at a company, they have different ideas going into the process of what they're looking for. So some people think, okay, the economy is doing really well in China, or they want to look at some emerging market over there. And so we're only allowed to trade publicly traded American companies, but some of those foreign companies trade on U.S. markets also, so we're able to access that. But beyond that, we don't have any allocation to any geographic area or bias towards any industry. The companies have to be greater than $60 million. And have a basic amount of liquidity. But other than that, we have pretty much free rein to go where we want, and that's kind of the beauty of the class is that every student gets to pick their own route, and it draws a lot of creativity within the students.
So we're precluded either ethically or otherwise by doing much investing in Alaskan companies. For me, I think I have one that I had from 15 or 20 years ago that I've had my self-directed portfolio, but there are a lot of companies I would have liked to have bought, like Tesoro when it was $5 a share,
or
Alaska Airlines when it was, you know, 15, 16. I could name off half a dozen companies that I, well, it's NBA rather, when it was still NBA before they sold out. Schlumberger, which had a big presence up here.
I think we have shares in Schlumberger at the moment.
But we can't do that.
No.
It's tough. Telecoms. We've got a number of telecoms that are several that are based up here that have looked tempting over the years. But in fact, I think both of them are traded. Are both of them? New York Stock Exchange? What a mess. What's GCI? Yeah. They're not. ACS, I believe, is traded on. I'm seeing you shake your head. Yes. Mm-hmm.
ACS is traded on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange.
Okay, NASDAQ. Yeah, so both of them probably are. GCI probably is too, then. It's got five letters. Those for me have been fun just to watch because they have so much activity. I'm really glad I wasn't in either one of them recently. But I didn't know if you spent time on Alaskan companies or not. I was curious about that, but apparently they're treated like everybody else.
Yep.
Yeah, the emerging markets is probably why you have 650,000.
Yeah, part of why we're outperforming the market is just from market movements favoring small cap companies lately, and that we do have exposure to small cap companies, so we've been dragged along with that momentum also. And the S&P is composed of large and small, and so our exposure to small has drawn us above the S&P to some extent. And so we're driven by market forces just like everyone else, but we try and do our best to pick companies within that.
What market segments are you interested in right now? Is anybody following whole segments?
To the chair, we actually have our performance sheets that break them down by sector, and within that we focus on different industries. But we do track the S&P 500. They are we follow leashes based upon how the S&P 500 is weighted. So one of our largest areas is in technology. But really, besides that, we are allowed to engage in any type of industry within those specific leashes. But my favorite, since I work for the supercomputer, was always tech companies. But the fun thing about the student investment fund is that you have some prerequisites to make sure you do understand the basic premises of finance, but other than that, we have a broad array of people coming in. Mitchell mentioned that he was mechanical engineering and interested in economics. I'm a finance major back at UAF. We have some people who are more interested in the medical field, and I know the previous semester, not this one, that became one of our favorite sectors was in healthcare. So everybody has their different preferences. We do follow leashes, but if we're in an acceptable limit to the S&P 500, then we're allowed to pick whatever companies we would like.
Representative Sadler, two pages it looks like.
Oh, no, just one page. Through the chair, great presentation. I almost want to dial back and ask some general questions about this. So this was first started with an appropriation. It started off at $100,000. It's now 600 some. Where does the money reside? Where is it in a bank, or is it a Scott Trade or Ameritrade or something like that?
To the chair, I'm Mitchell Titus. It is in an E-Trade account, and when it gets to a certain percentage above our performance, we take out money from it to give out in scholarships.
Really? Okay. Very cool. Is this class based, curriculum based? Is it a club? Is it a university? It's a class. Okay. Is there any correlation between the students' GPAs and your sector performance or anything? It's a setup. If you're better at grades,
you get a good grade.
Well, we obviously haven't correlated our GPAs, but there is, I suppose, a degree of trust in how much work the person has put into it. We know who has put more effort and more work into the particular stocks, and also who, or during the presentations, we have to vote on which stocks we buy and which stocks we sell. So you have to convince all of your peers to buy or sell the stock.
And to the chair, Representative Sadler, you are, I wouldn't say that everybody has a 3.9 in the student investment fund. You do have to be approved by Craig and by other instructors to ensure you've met the prerequisites. And while I don't view it strictly as a class that requires pure rote memorization, it seems more like a job. And I know there's been a couple of times where somebody's been late, and not only do you feel like you've let the class down, and sometimes receive an incentive not to ever do it again, you feel you let yourself down, because it does feel like a job, and you're not only you're not only having your best interests through grades being given out, but the more fundamental interest of having to provide scholarships for future students and just be good money managers.
Jeff, and to the chair, one thing on the scholarships, because we keep touching on them, is that the scholarship committee and the people who choose scholarships, none of us, even Craig, know who they are. And so we aren't in any way connected to the scholarships at all, and it's not just for students in our class. It's a completely separate deal that we don't even quite know how it works. But we know that a certain amount of our earnings, if they're above our benchmark S&P, then a certain amount of those earnings get to come out for scholarships. But it's not connected to us.
And is it just for finance and management scholarships, or just any?
Do you know, are the scholarships just finance? No, yeah.
Okay.
The scholarships are anyone, so that's how little we know about them. It's more. Yeah.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, and I appreciate the presentation. So the scholarship is like dividends. You pay dividends. So you've got a balance of $650. How much dividends have you paid out? Are scholarships given the total money?
To the chair, Representative Johnson, I guess last year, I remember, since we did particularly well, we issued, I think it was $10,000 in scholarships. We could come up with that figure for you, but since on that one slide we showed you, we re-added those scholarships back in.
Right.
So it's not like we've given out $50,000 in scholarships, but we can honestly say right now it's probably between $10,000 and
$50,000. And that's but total for the since you started?
To the chair, Representative Johnson, the payout requirements for the fund first require that we exceed the consumer price index.
Right.
And during the period 2001, when I got there, and all the way up to 2009, that total return on the fund, although relatively attractive, was not in excess of the consumer price index. So if we could not hold on to enough principal,
right,
we were prohibited from distributing any scholarship funds. But once we reached that threshold, and that was 2 years ago, we started distributing out funds. And we just contribute out up to 50% of the excess, but that's the maximum. And last year, it was $10,000. And going forward, I believe that we'll have another $10,000 distributed. And that's broken out across University of Alaska Fairbanks at large, but most of the scholarships have gone to School of Management students outside of finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Craig, you can pull the chair back up and save yourself a trip.
It's better to phone a friend.
Oh. Representative Sadler.
So did, not sure who can best answer it, did you guys ever fall below the initial capitalization of the $100,000?
No.
Good answer. There's no personal liability for any of this, is there? I mean, if you guys mess up, I mean, you lose a little bit of money, or a lot of money.
Well, to the chair, the personal is the fact that even though everybody votes on it, we do hold each other accountable. For instance, we'll still call up people who have long moved on from this class and let them know about the how their stock didn't perform. So there's a lot of peer pressure to perform well.
Actually, and to that point, do you ever reset? I mean, obviously you bring new investments forward and you kind of sway, trade and swap back and forth. Has there ever been an effort to say, let's just kind of wipe the slate clean and start from a blank sheet of paper and pick a new portfolio?
No.
Okay, fair enough. And the last question, he says this.
To the chair. On that, most of us here, we've only been here the last like 2 or 3 semesters, so we don't have a real long history with it. Most of our history comes from preparing for these presentations, as far as what goes farther back. But But one cool thing about it is since it's a two-semester course, we have overlap between the students. And so we have people who have already done a semester, they're in it the second time, and they're teaching the other students what they need to do to get things going their first time around. And so when we started, well, Craig was a second semester student when we were doing the class last semester, and the rest of us, this is Bryce's first semester now. The three of us were in our first semester last time, and so Craig was just trying to get us all up to speed on what we need to do. And going into it, we had no idea, but he'd been in it for one semester. And so there's that small amount of overlap that keeps the fun going, and so then someone usually knows what was going on before to carry that forward. Right. But then we have the summer period with no one actively managing it. We're all, since we're kind of locked into it, not by any signed or contractual reason, but just because we're interested, we're still paying attention to what things are doing, and so if something has a huge movement or a big change or big news, then we can talk to Craig and figure out if we need to get out of a position. But other than that, it's mostly does its own thing over the summer until we come back in the fall. So.
And the last comment, I guess, I spent several years in a investment club of friends, and you guys do a much better job of researching and doing backgrounding than we ever did. So it's not surprising you've done as well as you have. And encourage you to get involved in investment clubs, too. It's kind of fun.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. I think that he did answer that question I had. You do watch that, and if there's movement, you guys jump right in, and if you have to divest yourself, you take care of it. My question was going to be, how often do you go through the portfolio and say, you know, this isn't working out, let's get into something different? Is that done during school year? Is that done, like, quite often?
To the chair, Representative Thompson, yes, and because the course is presentation-based, we'll have on average 15 to 17 students, and they will give two presentations each in which they will have to make a sell recommendation. So you have 34 on average opportunities to look at a security that you want to get out of the portfolio. And so with that type of rigorous activity and looking at the portfolio and analyzing it, it's one of the reasons why we've done so well is the way the course is structured and the fact that we do have 34 opportunities to go in and swap securities in and out of that. And then a stopgap measure to that ultimately is Craig. If something goes awry, Craig does have the authority to step in if need be. To make that kind of decision. So as you can see, and as you've seen from the presentation, it is very much so hands-on, and I hope I've answered your question.
Thank you. You did.
Have you had any stocks that you've held since day one? Nope.
Chair, no. I think the longest stock that we've held during my 10 years with University of Alaska Fairbanks has been 4.5 years.
And Bryce Miller, to add to this again to the chair, we also do another presentation on top of the two presentations we do is market news, and which is pretty quick overview. We do market largest gainers and losers just to look to make sure none of our stocks are on there, because if they're on the gainers, they're on their way up and possibly could be on their way down tomorrow.
I think a few of mine are probably on both lists.
And we also go over the portfolio to make sure every morning we get a printout of our stocks, and we look over to see if there's any massive movement. So
yeah, with 24-hour trading, I would assume that there are some surprises periodically.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sounds like a really cool opportunity and really good training. And I'm also looking at the slide in front of me here that's talking about REITs and getting into the real estate. And as a real estate lawyer, I think that's very cool. So I'm hoping that as that gets a little more time under its belt, you'll come back and tell us how that's going. Are any of you interested in moving into that as well? Or, yeah? Yes? Good. We'll look forward to hearing more about that as that gets up and running.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of spending an hour this morning with these gentlemen.
Getting tips?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I think they're going to be making a lot more money than we are eventually.
Yeah.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. You guys can all shut your eyes. And who's the best? Oh, that's good. Okay, that's good to know. So can you see me after the...
I haven't invested my own money in any of these yet, so...
Well, I guess that would be the next question, is do you have your own money in it? That would be
the student has no money.
You know? Well, that's true. Okay.
Well, that's... Representative Sadler. Is this a popular class? Is there a waiting list? Are the, all the slots filled?
To the chair, Representative Sadler. Twofold response to your question. This is a difficult class. It involves a lot more work than a standard 3 credit hour class. And I think that that level of difficulty is widely known amongst the students. So we don't have lazy students signing up for the class. We do have a professor. I need to approve of anybody who wants to take the class. And when they come to talk to me about it, my main criteria is that they understand that the workload that comes with this class, and they view it as a challenge, and that they have a sincere desire to help future students. And if I see those two elements in the student, we will make room for that student. We have 16 capacity total across both semesters. And if I find that there is a level that far exceeds that, I think what we do is split the fund up and run two sections.
And apropos of nothing whatsoever, with all due respect to every member of the committee, are there females involved in this as well?
Yes. Okay. Today, you're seeing a fairly unusual slice, I think, our cross-section of students. Finance, and then this area of finance is almost like a battle going into the markets. There are winners and there are losers, and the field in general is predominantly male, although in the history that I've been leading the class, I'd say one-third of the students are female, and I see no difference in the investment performance across males.
And I'd say I really enjoyed your presentation. I appreciate that everyone contributed. Everyone had something to need to contribute. And like I said, I wish I was that smart and that ambitious at your age.
Thank you.
I've got a tough one for you. Are we going to see you next year?
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Next year, we'll know what to expect, and we'll get the word out and get more people here. We'd tried to get a couple more people from Fairbanks because we had a couple open chairs, but we're competing. We're getting closer to the end of the session, and we're competing with a lot of other committees that are being held, and you saw what happened to ours. We got pushed back. But I certainly appreciate you coming down and making the effort to see us and bring us up to speed, and I'm absolutely delighted that we have a program like this one. And if we don't have any more questions, we hope to see you next year.
If I could just make one comment. The year 1867 in the pamphlet that you've got, I think represents one of the best investments that our politicians have ever made.
The one that's the one we bought in Alaska? Or,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And that was $7.5 million back then. But even adjusted
it was right?
Gold, it was less than $1 billion to acquire Alaska. So these long-term decisions and the desire to buy and hold for the long term, I think, really reflects well.
Mm-hmm. Damn it, I'd be in the program.
I know. I know they spend a lot of time on the war, northern aggression.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Give
you a perspective on our state budget in
18. We're going to take a brief of these, and calendar is going to be an abbreviated version of Senate Bill 125, motor vehicle transactions. For the people that are in the LIOs or online, our committee was pushed back because of the extremely lengthy floor session, and what we're going to try to do is just get the bill right across today so we can bring it back on short notice as bills previously heard. And with that, we've got Representative Myers and Mr. Pulaski from his office.
Senator Myers, don't promote him.
Well, he's housebroken, so Senator Myers.
Thank you. I appreciate you letting me come back here. You know, this is a bill you guys are very familiar with. Representative Thompson introduced it, House Bill 235, and you heard it in this committee. It passed 6-2 passes, so I think this committee likes it. And now it the rules chairman now has it in his committee as well. So I'll be brief. It is simply just Senate Bill 125. By the way, for the record, I'm Senator Meyer representing Southeast Anchorage.
That's district.
O for awesome.
Yeah,
or O for.
O for awesome.
O for awesome.
I don't know. You know, it's well. The new district has it L for. We don't want
to touch that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, Senate Bill 125 is a consumer protection bill to protect and assist the consumer in finding and purchasing competitively priced vehicles. And I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, but basically it updates the statute referred to as Alaska Auto Dealers Practices Act, and it clarifies several provisions that were very unclear to both the consumer and to the dealers who were trying to abide by the law. The bill was drafted with very closely with Ed Sniffen, the consumer protection attorney for Attorney General's office. So I think we found a balance here between the consumer, the dealers, and the Department of Law. And with that, if you have any specific questions, Mr. Plosky and myself will do the best we can to answer.
You know, realistically, you know, we have heard this bill, but I think, you know, to give it the proper vetting, we're going to have public testimony on Monday, but I think it'll be next time it up, it will be a rather brief meeting, and we will get it out as fast as we can. I apologize again for the
problem.
The time overrun, but with that, we will hold public testimony open, and we will adjourn at about 3 minutes to 5, and thank you for coming.